KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Thank you for joining us today on ABQ Connect, this beautiful Monday, and we have some very special guests. Let me tell you who they are today. This is Jim Williams with you. We have former Albuquerque Police Chief Mike Geyer, former APD officers Thomas Grover and Brian McCutcheon, and these gentlemen have served our city well, protecting us, helping us. Thank you for your service, guys. But we have a mayoral election coming up, and the whole purpose of us being here is it's at least my perspective that crime is not going down in the state of New Mexico. I will say that when you look at the APD reports that come out, they seem to indicate that there's some lessening of different crimes, property crimes and different things. That's not been my personal experience. So I decided, hey, we're going to have some guys that know what they're talking about come in. Brian was kind enough to kind of organize this, and I appreciate you doing that very much.
Anytime.
So let's just get started, and I'm gonna point the first question at you, Chief Geyer. But I hope Tom and Brian will just jump in. We've got the full hour together. So, are there solutions to reducing crime in Albuquerque that are like super secret that nobody knows anywhere, or are there some tried, proven ways to actually do this?
Well, there's no secret formula by any means, but there are ways to do this. And there's, in this day and age, groups like the Major City Chiefs Association and the International Association of Chiefs of Police provide guidance and best practices. There's a lot of, independent businesses that are actually providing ability for these people to track crime and do use technology to the best advantage. We have technology in Albuquerque from the ShotSpotter, which I brought it was about 4 or 5 years ago, but it took a while for the mayor to actually accept it. And other things.
And that's a device that if there's a shooting, you're able to kind of pinpoint where it is geographically, right?
Within 50 meters, so it's pretty close.
Wow.
And officers, in the past, there's probably a very small percentage of shots fired calls go in certain neighborhoods because it happens all the time. And also the police don't respond right away. And when the police do, they don't really know where they're going. So when you can get an exact location, you don't drive through a kill zone where they start shooting at you as well. Mm. So it's a safety issue. But more importantly, as far as crime, it can track where those happen. And typically they'll happen around drug houses. And you'll see a series of other incidents happen around there. And then we can direct our attention to that area as far as proactive policing and other types of bringing, drug agents in there to try to make drug buys or whatever they can to get these people off the street.
Are all three of you familiar with one another when you were serving in the Albuquerque Police Department? Again, you have a lot of expertise. I want to tell our listeners about Thomas Grover. Tom? That's how you go?
Tom.
Former sergeant with APD. And it's interesting that you resigned from the department in 2011 and went to law school specifically because you saw things happening that you call misconduct with supervisors and other things. And now your law practice is primarily designed to help police officers.
That's correct.
That's really cool. I love that. I'm going to go off of what I asked Chief Geyer. I kind of want you to say that same thing about or answer the same question in terms of what can we do about stopping crime. But I want to add for you, Tom, is it even safe for police officers in Albuquerque to serve in our department?
I think it's much more challenging now to serve as a police officer out on the street, whether it's in the city or in a rural environment, than ever before. And a lot of that is because of the mentality and the attitude that offenders have that are in that criminal demographic towards police officers. Not that it was ever really safe before, but even now, because there's such a resistance to understanding what no means by officers or by society, that everything is questioned. So undeniably, I think officers have an incredibly difficult job now more than ever. And part of my practice addresses what happens when those officers don't get the support from their department like they should.
Yeah. And by the way, just because you're in this position, you're not advocating for police officers to get away with stuff that they shouldn't get away with.
Of course not.
You want excellence. Right. I think all three of you want that. Brian, you served in APD. You're helping now to protect the campus of Calvary Church, which is an amazing endeavor, kind of a big place for one or two guys to have to protect. But we appreciate your service. Tell me your experience in and what your thoughts are as you hear. I'm gonna add this. My daughter was a local television producer for 2 years. I think one of the reasons she left television news is because the bad news hurt her heart. Every day there was something awful that happened. And I think we're all overwhelmed by that. And there's answers. Do you believe that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think there's anything insurmountable that the city could be facing, but you have to get the right leadership in place and start correcting some of the wrongs that have been done over the past, you know, decade. And more officers in the street dealing with the lower level crime, homelessness, shoplifting. I heard a gentleman with the RAPA, which is one of the groups that deals with the like Walmarts and things like that, Target. And he was saying that what they had 10 years ago in misdemeanor shoplifting, they now have that in felony level, and not just fourth degree felony, but third degree moving on up. And because of the lack of support that they're getting, people, they're seeing the same people over and over again. He cited one example. The reason we brought the conversation up was his clerk at one of the stores he represented had been maced. They had a can of bear spray, and they bear sprayed the clerk and then walked through the aisles with a bag and loaded the bag and walked out, way above felony level. And it was somebody that they have had problems in the past with shoplifting. It's not being addressed.
So the officers are actually making arrests and doing things, but then they're kind of walking out of jail afterwards?
That's one problem, yeah.
And so that means we got to ask questions about the judges.
Yeah, and I kind of think that's been in place for about 10, 15 years. They're always talking about the revolving door and things like that. One of my jobs was I put together the prisoner transport unit back when I was on the department. Hmm. And the new facility, well, the facility that they're in now was one that I actually developed and implemented working with the county getting that done. So my own eyes and the people that work for me got to see the revolving door at work, because we were seeing the same people over and over and over again for the same crimes on a weekly basis. Matter of fact, almost some of them, we just called them frequent flyers. They were there every 3 days because they would go in, they get held, they get a shower, they get a few meals, they put them back on the street, they go commit a crime, come right back in.
Yeah. Chief Geyer, for part of your time as the chief, you worked under Tim Keller, our incumbent mayor, running for mayor again. That election is like a month and a half away. You mentioned something as we were talking before we started the show today, that Tim Keller made a statement when he first became mayor, which this will be his third term if he gets reelected. And I think you alluded to the fact that he made a statement that it's the mayor's responsibility to stop crime.
Yes, he had made number of different promises across, you know, as part of his campaign. And that was one of them, because crime was starting to rise. It was very apparent that there was more violence, more shootings, things like that. And he did make that statement. And he actually, we had a kind of an anti-crime press conference at the crime lab where we had shown all the guns that we had recovered in a certain period of time. We talked about trying to find some solutions and whatever. And he reinforced and supported that at the time. Later on, when I think he was running for a second term, he was faced with that because crime had gone up. What happened, so to speak? And he said, well, it would be like a fairy tale to believe that the mayor could actually reduce crime. Mm. So he contradicted himself, which I found, you know, highly inappropriate, because you don't make promises you can't keep.
Yeah. Amen. You don't make promises you can't keep. That's going to be a soundbite we're going to hang on to. I want to address all three of you with this question. Right now, you're speaking to largely the faith community. KLYT, we talk about Jesus. We talk about how our lives are affected. We acknowledge that we have shortcomings that are, you know, we're all fallible. But we depend on our faith to get us through that. And we receive forgiveness. We acknowledge things that we do wrong. We take responsibility. All of those different things. As we're talking right now, you're talking, like Brian mentioned, homelessness, and you've talked about repeat offenders and different things. Is there anything that is unchristian or unloving about trying to take care of our community and get people that are dangerous off the street?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, officers that get hired, I actually, you know, they basically say they want to help people. That's probably everybody that gets asked, why do you want to be a police officer? I want to make a difference. I want to help people. And somehow, you know, they get a little discouraged because of the way, whether it's political issues or whether it's the way the community treats them or way even the way the department is run, that kind of takes them away from that. And that's where the problem is because we forget that I mean, I'll give you an example. In the first part, the preface of our use of force policy is respect the sanctity of human life. And so when there's more police shootings and stuff like that that maybe are questionable, it totally goes against that. And same things with the way you see officers being arrested for excessive force or stealing or domestic violence kind of goes against that concept of, you know, respecting, you know, the dignity and sanctity of human life.
I don't want to diminish the importance of, by this analogy, of being a law enforcement officer. But I kind of view this like I would view my favorite sports team. Chief Geyer is the head coach, and he's responsible for coordinating and figuring out how to recruit good players. Brian and Tom were probably pretty good players. So, Tom, I'm going to direct this to you. Why is the Albuquerque Police Department having so much trouble recruiting officers? Like I went into the city's webpage and I'm looking at the police department's proposed budget for 24, 25, and 26.
$275 million.
Yeah. And in each one of those, they're saying, oh, well, we're hoping to reach a threshold of 1,100 officers, but we think we're only going to get 1,000. And then I actually dig and found out they only have 850. Well, I have lots of questions about that. Where's the extra money that was budgeted? Where did that go? What was that spent on? And why is it so hard now that and we'll talk about the DOJ and the court-approved settlement agreement. That's resolved as of May of 24. What's holding us up from getting good players?
I think you have to recognize that law enforcement for most is a calling.
Mm.
You don't want to go insert yourself into that world of violence and mayhem and horror and tragedy unless you have sort of the personal grit to deal with it and to help people. Now, are there people that want to go in and engage in, you know, low intensity conflict and apprehend bad guys? Absolutely. That's part of it. But I think for everybody who takes that oath and puts on that badge, it's a calling. I know it was for me. That being said, you want to go to a good team that's led by real leaders, that's managed properly, that has a lot of internal spirit. And for APD, it doesn't have that because there's how the management class operates and then there's how everyone else operates. There's how the administration operates and then there's how the regular employees operates. And I hear that from officers within APD day after day, week after week, all the time, that there's this disconnect between how the department's being led, what it looks like when it's quote unquote being led or not led. And it has that amplifies across the spectrum for that recruiting pool that everyone's trying to get officers to go into. So I think the first thing is you look at the management and the administration of a department. And if that's not inspiring, then, you know,
the management's not just the chief of police and his deputy chiefs. It's also the mayor. Right?
100% the mayor, especially in this time where in New Mexico, policing is so politicized that it's like New Mexico is like in the 1920s of the East Coast where they went through the political phase of policing. Right now, clearly the chief is, an arm's reach away from the mayor.
Yeah. Brian, you have a viewpoint on that?
Well,
maybe we should get a perspective. Let's say you're still a young guy. But when you were really young, would you have signed up for this department knowing what you know now?
I can't say, knowing what I know with the department, I would still love to be in law enforcement. What more honorable, you know, where could you be that would be better for that? But one of the things I was looking at when I joined the Albuquerque Police Department was I wanted the ability to make a difference and the authority to do that. And without that, you know, and so with the officers today, a lot of them, a lot of the things, your hands are tied. You're not allowed to make certain arrests. So, you know, fentanyl, felony with the homeless. There was somehow down through, whether it's word of mouth or there's an official policy, but officers will not arrest homeless for drug possession, felony level drug possession. They're not getting arrested. They get a somewhat of a free ride.
And it's not the police officers that are determining this. This is the leadership instructing them, this is what you'll do today?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I heard, I was at a function I heard some of the city administrators were there, and they were speaking about, they had been asked about some of the homeless and some of the crime and things that were being done. And one of the responses by it was actually Mayor Keller. He gave the sentiment that this was somehow society's fault, and that these are our chickens that have come home to roost. So we now have to deal with it as if, you know, we're being punished for somehow, you know, our actions in the past or that type of thing, which is shameful. Mm. Nobody in the community is thinking, oh, you know, we're forcing people to be homeless. We want them to be homeless. We want drug addicts on our streets. You know, we need this. That's ridiculous.
Well, in fact, I think, again, as we were talking before the show today, you were mentioning how much money is currently being spent on homelessness.
Oh,
over the last 4 or 5 years. And is homelessness, is there any reduction in homelessness? Is there any positive numbers we can look at? It doesn't sound like it.
Now, the numbers that I could find just for Mayor Keller's term, and they're around the $300 million mark. That does not include federal grants or anything like that. That's outside of federal money. So that's over however many in the past, you know, 8 years, give or take. Mm. And he's looking for more. $300 million. How many homeless? Matter of fact, the homeless population has doubled since, what, 2017? And so the statistics and what the mayor's saying do not match.
Chief Geyer, I'm thinking again about the faith community. Listen to the show today. And they want to have compassion. They want to love people. They want to actually do something to help. In fact, if there was a call to action that you had and you were currently the chief or even as a citizen now, they would probably support that because they want to show compassion. So I'm thinking, is it somehow mean for us to say we need to get homeless people to not stand on street corners and we need to not allow them to throw stuff all over the place? And is that not, am I being mean?
No, I mean, you know, that's a lot of the business owners will tell you how that affects their business. And some stores have closed down because of that. There's been fires during the winter, not to mention what they do around, you know, the vandalism and, you know, and just deterring people from, you know, even going, wanting to go near those places. But, you know, there are solutions that other cities have done. And we actually, it was in 2018, the mayor had a delegation from UNM that were supporting this program, this Chamber of Commerce and whatnot. We went to San Antonio for a program called A Haven of Hope. And they had the same kind of problems with homeless along their river walk, which was similar to our Central Avenue, I guess, would be the best approximation. And we went there, and it was an amazing situation. There were homeless people that the crisis intervention people would pick up and say, we'll take you to the shelter, the homeless shelter there. It's not just a shelter. I mean, they had three meals a day. They had an outdoor facility for the people that couldn't get into the actual housing. They had programs for families where they had buses to bring their kids to school. I mean, it was a complex that they built like a college campus in an area that similar to be our West Mesa, but there was former like factories and stuff. Then they actually refurbished some of those. And we actually have a shelter on the west side that could fit that location and build that. They had security, private security. They had places for them to, you know, turn in their drugs when they came in. They weren't allowed with that, no weapons. They could bring their carts and their dogs. they made it a place where the people wanted to come because they were getting, some people were getting job, you know, ability to learn how to do a job. They had, when we were there, they had an outdoor concert at their barbecue for these people. I mean, it'd be something similar to Coronado Park, but in a better way than what was going on there.
And it sounds like, based on what Brian was saying, is we're spending enough money to have something this, I don't want to say extravagant, I want to say this complete.
Right.
I mean, it sounds like we have the funding, but what we're doing at the Gateway Center, what we're doing on the West Side Shelter, doesn't seem to be really helping people very much.
No, and it, and they're still in locations, you know, like the Gateway is still close in the city where they end up in parks and stuff. They don't want to stay in there if they're addicted to drugs or alcohol and they want to drink and do their drugs. They're not going to stay in a facility very long. But if they're there where they have no choice, and, you know, otherwise they'll get kicked out. But they, you know, these people, they're human beings. I mean, some of them are hardcore. They just don't want to, they want to live on the streets. It's, a lot of it is mental illness, but that's another component of this shelter out there in San Antonio, is they try to treat them, the people with mental illness, and they try to, you know, control that, not just put them in the streets, you know, after they, you know, there's no way they can institutionalize them anymore. So they, you know, they don't do them any good, you know, favors.
I had somebody give me an analogy. I'm going to direct this at Tom. Because you're a lawyer and you understand conservatorship and some of those kinds of issues. So if you have a relative that has dementia and or even Alzheimer's to the point where they can't find their way home, you know, I've recently heard about a alerts that were put out the last couple of days about 70-year-old people, then they think they might be lost in the city. I mean, I'm close to that, so I feel bad. We wouldn't let our relatives in that position live on the streets of Albuquerque. We would have to take control of their lives. Is that not right, Tom?
I think that's fair. I mean, I think as a community, we want to take some degree of responsibility for those that are less fortunate. And, you know, that's a balance that needs to be recognized. Like, how much is the community going to belabor or be burdened with taking care of the less fortunate, to what extent? Just throwing money at homelessness and creating infrastructure where there's shelter isn't sufficient. There needs to be a way to get these people out of homelessness. And while the mayor's moved forward with these, you know, projects, whether it's the Gateway Center and the controversies behind that, one of the things that I haven't seen is whether or not there's a requirement of sobriety in order for people that are staying at these centers, to have in order to stay there. And that's something that's not clear to me. And if they don't have that sobriety element, then it's not going to be effective, because the cities that do have those shelters that have a sobriety requirement are much more effective in getting people off the street.
That's an amazing point. Jim Williams with you today on ABQ Connect. We have former Albuquerque Police Department Chief Mike Geyer in studio with former APD officers Thomas Grover and Brian McCutcheon. Tom is now an attorney representing police in various matters that come up. We're talking about reducing crime in Albuquerque, and we're trying to cover as much as we can in this hour, but we're going to take a break, say thank you to our sponsors, and we'll be back with these gentlemen. When we come back, I'm going to ask you all what you would challenge city council candidates and our mayor to do first to reduce crime in Albuquerque. That'll be my question when we come back. We'll be back on ABQ Connect right after these messages.
Connect.
We are back in studio with Mike Geyer, former police chief for the Albuquerque Police Department, retired APD officers, former officers Thomas Grover and Brian McCutcheon. Thomas is now serving as an attorney. Brian helps protect us over here at Calvary Church, and including our radio station. And Brian, I'm actually always kind of surprised at how many people you have coming onto the property that have ill intent just here.
Yeah, there's a lot of folks. We had one this morning, as a matter of fact. But when I started here 3 years ago, we were averaging two or three a week that we would actually have to go and I don't want to say confront, but actually talk to and see what was going on with where they were belligerent and angry. And expecting something, you know, you're a church, give us a handout, you know, kind of a mentality. Yeah. Now we're up to that. We get that daily. We already had one this morning, as I was mentioning. He demanded money. I need money for gas.
And the church does offer help.
Absolutely.
But there's people that are I don't know. I've personally, I've had a couple people camping out in the Greenbelt. I've come in, reported to the safety team what's going on. We've even brought them in, got them food to eat. We've called like Joy Junction, which is a homeless shelter that we think does a great job, and they have an emphasis on sharing the gospel as well as meeting their physical needs, everything from helping them get a job to having a safe place to live. And I've not seen one person yet receive that help. They don't want it. They want to do whatever they want to do. There's a lot to this. There's so much that we could cover. We're only going to have an hour. So I want this to be something that all three of you answer, but I want to ask Chief Geyer to say his opinion first. What's the most important thing that our candidates, the mayoral candidates, our city council, this municipal election happens the first week of November this year. And what should voters be almost requiring of these candidates? Okay, if I elect you, you better be doing this to reduce crime.
Well, I mean, it's obviously that that different candidates have different platforms. And some of them...
Surprisingly, I will tell you, I've interviewed almost all the candidates. They make statements, but they don't actually have a plan.
And that's the problem, is that, you know, I heard one, and I'm not going to, you know, identify the person, but his plan, and it was on a TV 30-minute show, was ridiculous. I mean, I hate to say it. It was not feasible. It would not work. It was a pie-in-the-sky type response that just wouldn't even be able to get off the ground. And they can't do that. And I don't think they should be hypercritical of each other. You know, it's like, you know, be careful, you know, of what your skeletons in your closet are. And they, like you said, is don't come up with problems, come up with solutions. That should be your first thing. And workable solutions, not something that, you know, you off the top cuff are going to, you know, say, well, I can implement that when it's not possible. And so I think if honesty of the candidates come forward, and I think they should be honest in terms of their mistakes and failures. I mean, I think that's a quality a human being is to recognize is that, you know, I'm not perfect. What we see, I think, from some of the candidates are, well, you know, we've done this and I've done this and accomplished this, and they totally overlook what they haven't accomplished.
Let me tell you, the one candidate that didn't have a complete plan, but she did have an answer that I was impressed with, and that was Maylene Armijo. Maylene is a former Armed Forces service person. She said very strongly to me that she understands the chain of command and that she would bring in leadership. That would be her main plan, to bring in leadership. She doesn't understand everything about law enforcement, but that she would bring in leadership that would bring that. Does that sound like an important first step?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was one of the problems I had with the mayor when I was chief, was that pretty much I was supposedly the expert in law enforcement. That's why I was brought there. And I had the you know, the training and years of experience in it to come up with ideas.
Chief, I don't want you to tell me your political party affiliation, but I kind of do, in the sense that you are a member of the same party Keller is. Is that right?
No.
Okay. So, well, and that's why it's interesting to me, because this is supposed to be a nonpartisan election.
Right.
But it seems to me that special interests are being catered to for all kinds of reasons. And I think the leadership we have to get together as a community. I don't care if you're a person of faith, if you're an atheist, if you're, you know, you have orientations to life that are different. We all have to get together as a community, treat each other as neighbors, and start working together and get something done. So what would be number one? What would you like to see mayoral candidates and city councilors commit to between now and the time of the election?
Well, if they're going to address crime, is we've got to have a better recruitment program. And whether that's recruiting high school students to get college classes and get credit for that and go into, say, CNM or UNM, have that ability to, you know, have some exposure to the police department, such as with the PSA program. And also, I mean, one of the biggest problems now is, you know, our best recruiters are our own officers. And some, they're telling some of their own family members, don't go to APD, go to Rio Rancho, go to another city, because of the image of APD has been having corruption and other issues, like you, like we've mentioned about leadership. You know, they don't feel like they're, you know, there's one thing to throw money at it, but money isn't what makes the police officers want to go.
But the police officers have had pretty substantial raises in the last 5 or 6 years, right?
Right.
So you can make a living being a police officer.
Oh, it's much more better than it was years ago. I mean, when I started here, it was $8 an hour in the academy. But, you know, it's, but that's not the answer. I mean, you know, even with, you know, like Maslow's theory of hierarchy, I mean, money only goes so far. Once it's, you have it, is, you know, you're going to just stay there. You're not going to work any harder. But if you have, you know, guidance from your leaders and they're showing, leading by example, and they're actually rewarding their officers for doing the right thing, they're not covering up other things, that there's that image of the department is, you know, if you don't want to work for a department that's not going to work for you, then go somewhere else, because there's plenty of departments in, you know, all around in New Mexico alone that would be a better fit for some of these people. And it's, that's the problem is that everything is, well, you know, the union wants more money, they want more benefits, they want this and that, but there's officers out there that would do the job for nothing and, you know, work sometimes overtime without getting paid, because they love the job.
And that's what Tom was saying earlier, that it was a calling. Tom, what's your perspective on that? I mean, you have been a police officer, now you're an attorney, you're helping police officers. What are these candidates, what do we need to do to change the whole thing around? Right now we're talking about dysfunction in the department, and we're talking about leadership that's not inspiring, difficult, making it difficult to recruit.
I think first you have to recognize that you can't pay your way out of a staffing shortage. Even in departments that are fully staffed, when they do surveys to identify, you know, job satisfaction elements, compensation and benefits is always in the bottom of the top 10. Mm. It's morale, it's making a difference, it's being part of a team, it's being one of the good guys that is, makes being a cop gratifying, rewarding experience. And I, you know, I have people ask me all the time, do you miss it? And I absolutely, I miss it every day. Mm. For the candidates, I think the goals are split between long-term and short, if not immediate, objectives. And long-term goals are, you know, increased recruiting plans, building programs that retain officers, invite laterals to come over from the department. But I think what we need as citizens of the city are, what are you going to do day one? What are you going to do the first week? What are you going to do the first month? That's different than what's being done now, because there needs to be change. And there needs to be a tactical initiative to address crime in this city the way that it hasn't been addressed in the last 8 years, because we're not winning.
So the court-appointed settlement agreement, which Chief Geyer, you were serving after that was implemented in the department. So, again, I'm sorry my analogies are all athletic, but I come from that athletic background, and I'm thinking that there's a school on NCAA probation, and it's kind of hard to recruit because your athletes can't go to a championship or do something like that. So I'm thinking the DOJ's in here, this court-approved settlement agreement. I mean, there's all kinds of comments about James Ginger I've heard, you know, getting paid a whole lot of money and never actually being here. I just still don't even get that whole thing. But now they're not here. But that has been used as the excuse for the incumbent administration for not being able to recruit. It's been a year, year and a half, or year and 3 months, 4 months, and they're still not recruiting effectively. So tell us about that whole deal, because, Tom, you were involved in that and some of your officers as well.
I don't think it's a consideration for virtually any candidate looking or who has looked at APD in the last 8 years. It's such at a high altitude that there's just a lack of understanding in terms of what the city's obligations were under it, even with the actual people that were engaged with satisfying elements of the CASA. And even in the midst of an obvious growing crime crisis, just because the CASA was in play doesn't mean the city couldn't have taken actions to suspend aspects of it so that more officers could be allocated to the street or investigations. That's why there's a court. That's why the city used to have, you know, a fleet of attorneys and argue its way out. So I don't think it was ever really a factor in terms of recruitment. I think it is a factor once officers – I think it was a factor once officers were in, but it could have been managed in a much better way.
But do you recognize what I see as a citizen, that it was used as the excuse?
Absolutely. Yeah,
but
because –
you're kind of saying it wasn't a legitimate excuse.
I totally agree. It wasn't a legitimate excuse. I mean, brave leadership is going to find ways to resolve the issue. And what we have with the current administration is a lot of finger-pointing and fancy labeling of programs like the Metro Crime Initiative 1.0, 2.0 ad nauseum.
What about those initiatives, Brian? I mean, we were talking before we started the broadcast today that – some of those things are announced, and then they just kind of go away, and nobody knows what happened.
They fade away like smoke in the wind. So the mayor came up with that 40-point initiative, 1.0, as Tom was mentioning, 40 points, you know, gun control, and we need this, we need this, we need this. None of it came to fruition.
Yeah.
None of it. And nobody questioned him about it after that.
We're going to take another break, say thank you to our sponsors. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about our incumbent mayor's record. What's happened in the last 8 years? And I want you to make comments about that. And again, this is not a place where we complain. This is a place where we say, okay, God's given us some insight, and this is what needs to be done. And that's what I want the focus to be. But you have to start with where we are at. And that's what we're going to talk about when we come back in the next segment. Jim Williams with you on ABQ Connect. Please stay with us.
Connect.
Back in studio with former Albuquerque Police Chief Mike Geyer and former APD officers Thomas Grover and Brian McCutcheon. Chief brought a book called The Blue Journey, Memoirs of a Cop's Cop. Thank you for bringing this.
You're welcome.
When did you write this?
I finished it in 2019.
Was this trauma motivated?
No, I mean, all along I had been keeping, my dad was a police officer and he had scrapbooks and newspaper clippings. And so when I started doing that, when we moved here to Albuquerque, I put like maybe 9 boxes in my garage, full file boxes of clippings and stuff. And I always, you know, wanted to somehow write a book and use that. When I did get kind of forced to retire, I used that time to start in working with publishers and whatnot and just put all the stories together. I mean, my first draft, this book is about 430 pages. My first draft was 900 some pages, and they said, no way, know, too much. But it was a kind of a goal of me to, not just for me, but to kind of pay honor to the officers I worked with, pay officers, the families, the sacrifices that wives make and children and missed birthday parties and all that. I wanted to let the public and people that aren't law enforcement understand what we go through. And the sacrifices that we made all the way up to the, you know, losing your life in the line of duty. Yeah. And so I tried to pick stories that would show that and show that officers are really good people for the most part. There's always going to be bad apples in any profession.
I have read parts of your book. And one of the things I notice is you'd also point out that families are serving too, just the officers.
Yeah. I mean, when wives wait for home and don't know if their husband is going to come through that door, you know, safe, or if they get the knock from two police officers at the door. I mean, it's a horrible feeling. And I was at 2 funerals for officers that got killed within a short period of time in Rio Rancho. And I went to the funerals of several officers, and we all did in APD over the years. And I mean, it's an honor that, you know, that we, the way we treat officers after that, for the respect and try to show that. And you go to Washington, there's DC, they have a major, you know, celebration of life. But I don't think that the public, and I don't think some of the politicians appreciate what the officers do every day and the sacrifices.
Yeah, great. And people can pick this up, I'm assuming.
On Amazon. It's available.
Amazon, okay. Yeah, okay. And it's called The Blue Journey, Memoirs of a Cop's Cop by Mike Geyer. Brian, I'm going to start this segment with talking to you about you're a citizen. You have some intimate knowledge, though. We have the Balloon Fiesta coming up. Ooh. I know you used to be part of a team of people protecting citizens at the Balloon Fiesta.
Yep, that was my specialty.
So talk about Where is the department now? How do you perceive it?
When dealing with the Bloom Fiesta?
Well, everything. I kind of pointed out the Bloom Fiesta because that's not going to be unique. The symptoms of fail are going to be evident there as they are across the city, if you wouldn't.
Well, I'm actually still in contact with a lot of people. We've developed some very close relationships, especially some of the hierarchy that was with the actual Bloom Fiesta organization. Their disappointment with the department was things such as they could not provide the same services that they have in the past. And so like traffic enforcement, traffic control, that's much, much less. They're working with a skeleton crew. If you don't have officers to work it.
Is that because there's less people going to the Balloon Fiesta, so it's not needed?
No, not at all. It's all about the officers and boots on the ground, and we do not have them to provide. And so they're either too tied up. You know, you still have a city to run when the Balloon Fiesta is going. Mm. You still have to have people answering calls. You still have to people going to those calls. They can't be at the Balloon Fiesta directing traffic. You got to pick your poison.
Yeah, Tom, you're an attorney. You're holding the city accountable in many ways with the officers that you're representing. But I think you, maybe you should tell us what you want. Do you want just police officers to have it any way they want, or are you just looking for excellence and safety in our community? Sounds like you've got a job now that's providing quite a bit of security.
I want which every citizen and everybody at this table wants, which is the best police officers we can have in the city and the state, both in their internal character and in their training. And because it is a calling to take that oath and put on that badge, and you're entrusted with a huge amount of authority and responsibility, and we want people with the highest level of integrity to do not just the right thing because they're on camera, but to do the right thing when they're not on camera and not being watched. Albuquerque has had that. It can have that. Like Chief Geyer said, sure, there's going to be problematic personnel in any profession. You have it with pilots, you have it with doctors, you have it with law enforcement. And that's the nature of it because we're all humans. But to grow the department to where it can serve the citizens is going to take more than throwing money at it. I mean, in the Southwest, Albuquerque on a per capita basis is one of the most expensive and highly funded police departments out there. And I don't think we're seeing the receipts for its successes. And it's time to turn that around.
Again, maybe a basketball analogy. Sounds like we're playing 2-on-5. We just don't have enough people. Chief, in your leadership with the department, were you able to start increasing the number of people interested in joining the department?
When I started, it was the end of 2017, and we had a very proactive recruitment program. We added more people. They only had, when I started, they only had 2 recruiters. And so we built that up. We started doing things like sending people to colleges with criminal justice, you know, going to those meetings. We went to career days at high school, things like that. And we were trying to do our best to bring in the laterals. We brought in a whole bunch of laterals, I think, in the first 6 months.
When you say laterals, you're talking about recruiting at other departments.
Right.
That was like NIL. You're getting people to transfer to Albuquerque.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, and I had just left Rio Rancho, and I think 8 or 9 officers from Rio Rancho came and applied for Albuquerque and were with the department for a period of time. We did that. I mean, right now, and I noticed in one of your questions before in the materials, is how many officers does Albuquerque actually need? And a gentleman named Brandon Bradley Day put out a full-page ad in the journal explaining, you know, how shortage we are. And one of the things that he brought out was the city of Boston is probably about 100,000 more in population, so it's bigger. And they have 2,000 plus officers, 2,000. Wow. And so it's double what the amount we were trying for. Now, when I started, we had, it was under 800, around 800. And when I left, it was at 1050. And we had lost some. And I know they lost a lot of officers after that because of the way that the administration was putting all efforts to get through the CASA. And mm-hmm. they, at all costs, and officers were paying the price, and they were getting overwhelmed with weekly policy adjust changes and have been held accountable for that. So that caused some issues afterwards. But, you know, we would probably need roughly, based on the crime here, and you know, big cities are going to have more crime, probably at least 1,600 officers. I hate to say it. It would be at least that much minimum to be able to have visibility. I mean, I could ask anybody, you know, in my own neighborhood, the last time I saw a police car go by there,
yes,
was the deputy that lives down the street. I mean, there's no APD officers unless there's a call in the area. Even on major streets like Eubank, people are driving crazy and cutting each other off, and you don't see traffic stops anymore. And so that, in order to do that, that kind of deterrence by having an officer visible and whatever, and that's a lot of what anti-crime program is about, is visibility or selective enforcement in areas where there's big problems. And APD can't really afford to, you know, use all the field officers to just do a, you know, a special operation or whatnot, because then there's nobody to answer calls. So they have to get up to that level, and I think that would be a goal that the mayor would have to work for, as well as with the police chief and the police administration, and more so importantly, the community, because the community, you know, their sons and daughters and their, you know, the neighbors and whatever, you know, they would be the best police officers, you know, be in those areas and support, you know, the department and what they've grown up with, as, you know, going to school and say, you know, in the you know, area where in National District, there's a lot of diversity there too. And having that kind of, you know, ability to bring people from different cultures in and blend that would be a great opportunity for Albuquerque to become a better police department overall.
Are you three, I was never good at this. I was a CBA used to be, the Continental Basketball Association was kind of a farm system for the NBA, and I was terrible at selecting players. I'd see them do something like a great slam dunk or whatever, and I'd immediately want to recruit them, and then I found out they couldn't do anything else. So I'm going to ask you this question that's not on our list. Are you three able to talk to a person, maybe multiple times, not saying you have to know this, you know, love at first sight kind of thing, but are you able to discern whether somebody's called to this profession? Are you able to interview them and say, yeah, this is the kind of person we want?
Well, the background is, and that's part of the recruiting problem too, is, you know, it takes like 6 months from the time when somebody applies to the time they actually get maybe in an academy. We do, I think, and I'm not, you know, 100%, but from what I've heard from officers, is they've actually lowered the standards in some areas. And they also, when they do that last thing, like you just said, is, you know, talk to the, you know, what they do is the academy brings them to what's called a chief selection. That's the last interview they make before they make a decision. And I've been on that board several times, not just as a chief, but as a commander and higher ranking. And you can see things that the academy points out, say, ask them about this. And you'll find is that some of them had some serious problems. In Rio Rancho, I had an officer, would have been a great candidate, and sometimes they've burned themselves by their own past. This gentleman was cited a couple times for minor in possession when he was at high school, and it ended up he got into a car accident on Lomas where he hit a cab, and like all three people in the cab were killed. So he came to apply, and he had actually been through prison, and part of his sentence was that he was go and talk to kids in school and talk about it. But I couldn't hire him because of that one mistake. So, you know, the people, their past, what we see now is they're being more loose with like drug use and other kinds of, you know, minor crimes maybe. But it's the minor stuff, like in law enforcement, it's when we do evaluations, sometimes we look for the worst and the best, and we find we overlook little things like, let's just say, missed courts. And we say, well, that's not a big deal. Well, as you can see from the DWI scandal, those are the things that are the worst. So they really have to, they can't just push people through. They have to scrutinize that background, do more interviews with neighbors and friends and everything else, try to find out if this person is qualified. Because we need more officers, but we need them to be qualified and not lower standard where they end up embarrassing the department.
Yeah, that's interesting. Tom, what are some of the things that you have to, I know you can't disclose names and all those kind of things, but what are some of the things that you have to defend police officers from?
Retaliation by their employer upon them for trying to do the right thing to bring attention to deficiencies or improper or unlawful acts by people in departments, or conduct on duty where they're getting disciplined unfairly or even facing the end of their career. Those are the types of officers I represent and defend. The ones that get caught up in off-duty conduct that have no business in policing don't make my client list. It's people that are trying to do their job as police officers that, you know, whatever administration, you know, gets their nose out of joint and decides to, you know, hit them with discipline that's either not supported or grossly unfair, or those officers that are actually trying to do what we want of everybody, which is to police themselves and say, no, you can't do this, or that's false, don't do that, and they find themselves being retaliated against.
It's real interesting. Tom brought up a great point because some of the heavy-handedness that's been going on, there was an officer who I spoke to personally, and so he's driving one day, he's driving along on patrol one day, looks over, recognizes a bad guy that's on the sidewalk. He slams on the brakes, he bails out, grabs the guy, gets him in handcuffs, warrant or something, I don't know exactly what it was for, puts him in the car, and he's out in the middle of the street, the officer is, so he pulls forward, you know, 30, 40 feet and parks on the curb and finishes what he was doing. Now, the department has been doing these weird looking back things where they're reviewing video and they're punishing the officers because they're finding these horrible indiscretions. Now, the officer was punished. His indiscretion was, one, he was wearing sunglasses and he didn't take them off before arresting the subject, went in communication with the subject. Two, he didn't call out his mileage when he had the officer, the bad guy in the car. So that's one of the things, was a standard. You call out your starting mileage when you're taking them to the jail or wherever you're taking them. That way they can account for time and mileage, things like that. And number three, he didn't put his seatbelt on when he drove the 30 feet to get next to a curb to get out of traffic. And so he was given like a day off. They punished him with a day off retrospective for doing that.
And when ridiculous. You have to worry about little things like that, it's just got to drive you nuts. We're going to end up with only about 8 minutes left, so I have to take another break, but we're going to come back and finish up those 8 minutes. And Chief Geyer, if you don't mind, I'm going to address exactly what Brian just said. How, as leadership, do you get rid of all that petty stuff and actually worry about the stuff that matters? We'll be back on ABQ Connect. Stay right with us.
ABQ Connect.
Welcome back to ABQ Connect. Kind of have a short segment here. I'm so glad you're listening right now. I hope that you will take the time to go vote. We have the municipal election coming up. We've got city councilors. We've got the mayor. And I hope you'll really give some great thought as to crime in Albuquerque, where that's gone under the current administration. And Chief Geyer, I'll start with that. What's the status of crime in our city right now?
Well, I've been following it very closely, and if you remember when COVID and all that was going on, they were blaming the rise in crime on COVID and the George Floyd protests and all that, and crime was high across the nation. If you would Google major cities now, the last 2 years, there's been a significant downtrend across the board, and Albuquerque is taking credit for, you know, getting all, we're reducing crime, when really it's just the reverse of what happened back when all the crime was up high. So, I mean, it's, I think the perception of crime is still high by citizens, whether the numbers are low or not. If you're a victim of a crime, that's going to stay with you. And the fact that some of these crimes aren't being reported because there's not enough officers to take the call could be affecting the numbers too. But I think the visible riding down Central or some of the side streets in the International District and some of the things you see in the newspaper, you know, I mean, there's still shootings, just one yesterday, I think. And I think there's a, not maybe deliberate or not, but some of the information isn't being disseminated. Like, how many exactly in 1 year are there shootings without people getting killed, just shooting with injuries, okay? Or how many shots fired? I mean, I remember when we first did it, on one Friday night, there were 95 shots fired in the three areas. I mean, and that's, you know, the kind of an indication of like the Wild Wild West down the main street. You know, it's, there's a lot of things that go on that the public don't see, but we do see the end results when there's, you know, homicides and all the other issues that occur. So I would say their numbers may be correct. They may not be. We've had issues with, you know, if the reports aren't turned in on time and things like that, or if they change the way a crime is defined. You know, a burglary could easily become a theft or vandalism.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the problem.
This is going to, and I'm sorry that our time, we only had an hour and we're pushing limits. This is going to be my last question, and that is there enough cooperation between local agencies like Bernalillo County Sheriff's Department, Sandoval Police Department, APD, other, you know, Santa Fe and other surrounding cities, and even Homeland Security and departments like the FBI and the CIA, is local law enforcement able to take advantage of all those relationships, or can that be redeveloped and improved upon?
Well, I mean, we have task force with the DEA, you know, ATF, FBI, and Homeland Security, also the federal prosecutors as well. So we do work with them. I mean, they have a different level of standards and stuff. And I mean, we have officers on these task force, but there's a lot of cooperation. And FBI, a few years ago when I started, helped us with a robbery task force that reduced armed robberies significantly. As far as local, one of the problems with, well, right now they're working very well. Well, BCSO and the state and the district attorney's offices are the ones that are doing all the major operations, and APD's not involved in that for some reason. I think that cooperation has turned out where it's really been helpful. As far as places like Rio Rancho and some of these other areas, the problem for them to work here is they'd have to get certified, or not certified, but it's they get
commissioned
as, you know, as, you know, temporary officers and deputy, you know, at, you know, for the city because they work there. And their departments are so small, they really couldn't give us a lot of help. But as far as cooperation in terms of sharing information, crimes that happen in Berlin could actually affect us. And so we do have, you know, interactions like that.
So that kind of dialogue is actually going on.
Yes. Yes.
Am I wrong in what I've learned in this hour together with you guys, that this whole thing that we have is leadership? How can the voters hold the mayoral candidates accountable for bringing in leadership and not just talking about it? Brian, I'll go with you first.
Oh, you, one, look at what the mayoral candidates are saying, number one, and how they're going to address that. And there's at least two of them out there that are very, very strict. Luis Sanchez, you know, day one, I'm firing the chief. And he's a former police officer with the Albuquerque Police Department. And so he recognizes the issues. And of course, he's city council, and he's been battling the mayor and the chief constantly with issues like that. And so he recognizes specifically that there's something that needs to change and how to get that change. I would like to see them cast out a wide net across the country. If they can find somebody local, such as Mike was fantastic. If they're going to pick a chief, you know, cast a net, bring somebody in from the outside who is not, I don't want to say tainted, but who doesn't have a set mind on what it is and how it is. Look at it fresh and what needs to be done. Because anybody who's reasonable is going to say, holy mackerel, you know, we don't have officers. We need officers. I need better leadership. We don't have good leadership. We don't have leadership that can direct and point without this minutia, this bureaucracy that's going on right now.
Yeah.
The officers can't do their job.
Yeah. Tom, what's your perspective on that?
Crime happens because you have a demographic of people that when they're told no, they still do it. And the more remote the repercussions of still doing it when you're told no, are the more likely it's going to happen again. And I think this election is an opportunity for, the citizens to say no to an incumbent candidate that has brought us to where we are, and to look at other options, because this candidate's going to continue doing what he's done for the previous 8 years. And it's time for everyone to step up and say no. You know, when the George Floyd matter happened, Keller was out protesting with other folks, and that sets the tone for the department. And, you know, regardless of your position on what happened there, riots in the street of Albuquerque and endorsing it by refraining from action isn't a great way to address crime. No. And where we are now is this, it's the same thing. Keller's just trying to pivot. And I think it's time for the citizens to say no.
Chief Geyer, don't know if you're still in the game or willing to be in the game. Brian alluded to maybe that would be a person like yourself. What would you do first week as a new police chief?
I think that question would be easy to answer. The current chief has brought in a lot of, let's just say, people friendly to him. Yes men, yes women. Not always necessarily the most qualified, and they've brought in so many extra people. I think there's like, I don't know, deputy commanders and commanders in excess of 50 or more.
Yeah, it's 60 to 80. I was looking at the numbers on that.
So, and there's different pay scales so they're hiding them. They've brought people back that all three of us would say, what are you doing? This person shouldn't have been an officer in the first place. And I would go and individually see what those people are doing. Are they hidden niches and little offices and whatnot? The ones that I can deal with, they're going to go on the streets. We need officers on the street. And mm-hmm. I don't care if I would reduce that, you know, because they're at a at-will position, bring them back to lieutenants or they can leave. And if they get lieutenants and we have enough lieutenants under the union, they're going to be like field officers on the street at lieutenant's pay, but they're going to be taking calls. We've got to solve the problem with more officers whatever way we can. Again, with the leadership, is I would try to bring in a good team of leaders. You know, when they do national searches, just because somebody was a great leader in D.C. or whatever, if they don't know the culture here, they're going to be, you know, it's going to take them years before they can get, you know, integrated into the program. And I think that's the big thing is, well, we got to go outside. There are a lot of great people in APD. And I think that there's some great leaders that have been overlooked. And I think that if the mayor would work in cooperation with APD chief, and I think like somebody like Louis or anybody else, Maling, that know law enforcement or know that there's a chain of command and how to back off when you know, I mean, Tom can talk about this too, but the mayor had something called the Matrix, which basically was supposed to be like project management thing. Well, APD had some upwards of 50 and 60 things on that list that actually went ahead. I had to get done before our own priorities were done. Other departments maybe had two or three, some of the other directors. And so we were overwhelmed, and every Friday I'd get the CAO would be on my back about when are you going to get this done and get that done. And it really deters if they would back off and let the people that know what they're doing do the job. It's not that we don't answer to them and we have to interact with them. And, you know, there are some things at their level that may be interesting that we have to make sure we take consideration in. But I mean, say this, our officers, you know, and that's the best thing too is, you know, it shouldn't be a top down from the chief to the officers. The officers should be able to, you know, say, look, I see this problem. There's all these hotels in my beat. Can we do an attack plan and whatever? And they can't do it because there's not enough officers. And if they do their own, do you think it's going to be my baby project? Do you think they're going to not do a good job or go through the motions? They're going to give it 100%.
Ownership of your area and your beat. That was pushed and pushed hard when I came on the department. When you're working an area, that area is yours. You are responsible for it. If something happens in your area and you don't know about it, you're going to hear from it. Your sergeant would find you and say, what happened here? And you better have an answer.
Yeah.
And there's a leadership instructor, but he goes and gives a lot of talks. And one of his statements was, it's not a matter of being in charge of your people. It's taking care of the people in your charge. And I think that is, you know, from the top down, I think that has got to be prevailed through the department. We've all worked with good supervisors and we've worked with some bad ones. And I think that's what we got to scrutinize is who we promote and their job ethics and everything else. Ethical policing is sometimes goes by the wayside when you have people that are looking out for themselves first.
I am really blessed that you three came in and talked to us today. I hope our faith community, the people that are listening to KLYT today, will listen to this and re-listen to it. You can find it on abqconnect.online. Of course, you go to klyt.fm. And I hope you've enjoyed this and learned a little bit about it. And I hope as a voter, you'll get out and vote at the municipal election. So, gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Jim, thank you for having us.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.